crime is surging in California, and California Democrats are the latest victims to their own policies. Allie Thomas and Kyle Becker join us to discuss. President Donald Trump says he has immunity, and he made that argument in front of the Supreme Court yesterday. Mike Davis joins us to react. The New York Appeals Court overturned the rape conviction facing Harvey Weinstein. Phil Holloway joins us to discuss. Pro-Hamas protesters are taking over college campuses. There's very few people looking for answers. America First Legal is looking for answers. That's why Dan Epstein joins us tonight. All that and more on The Brianna Morello Show. Happy Friday, everyone. Congratulations. You made it through the week. It was a crazy week, of course. So much going on in the news cycle. But, well, it gave us a lot of laughs, and I think we need to highlight just that. So let's head over to some really important headlines. The first one up is the press secretary, you know, the DEI hire over in the White House. Well, it looks like nobody really likes her. Corinne Jean Pierre, whatever her name is. Well, folks, it looks like according to this exclusive being, you know, broken on the New York Post by somebody who has reason to not like her either. His name is Stephen Nelson. It looks like there was an active attempt to push her out and oust her as press secretary, and rightfully so, right? She's just awful at her job. She's constantly looking down at her binder, and she really doesn't have good responses for much these days. So KJP is looking to get pushed out, and it looks like it was from top officials trying to nicely nudge her out the front door, telling her, like, look, this isn't working out. Let's try to get you something else. But she's not leaving, and that's the problem here. Let's bring in some people who might have a little bit of expertise in all of this. Let's bring in Kyle Becker. He is one of my favorite follows on Twitter, of course. He is also a former Fox News producer. And he is the, obviously, founder of the Kyle Becker website.com. So make sure you check that out. And we've also got Allie Thomas, who's a crisis manager and the former director of operations for Congressman Matt Gaetz. It's good to have you both on today. I'm so happy you're here. Allie, you got to be first one up because you obviously manage crises and you see one probably on the horizon with KJP. So looks like they're trying to nudge her out. She's not leaving. She's not budging. But they're saying ultimately they're afraid of the public backlash, I guess, if they don't push her out, if they do push her out and she gets really upset and goes out publicly and starts talking about that, because she is a DEI hire. Really, she was only hired because the fact that she is a part of the Alphabet community and she's Black. So now she's not very happy about this these days. So how should the White House handle this push out the door for KJP?
I don't have that in my binder, the answer. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to read it off. So my gut tells me that, wow, DEI doesn't work. That's so crazy to me. So their whole platform and everything of diversity and equity and inclusion failed miserably. And, you know, I'm sure she has great qualities in other means of work, but definitely isn't a good press secretary. She never has been. And it's unfortunate because I think that she's getting a little beat up, if you will, verbally, because she is so terrible. And so as a human, I feel badly for her. But listen, I always wanted to play football, but I'm a 5'5", 120-pound girl that can't play football. So sometimes you have to take your – you have to pick your battles, and I became a cheerleader.
Well, that's one way to look at it for sure. And the thing, you bring up her background, she really didn't have any experience. She was just mainly an advocate and an activist out there in the streets all the time, blobbing about God knows what. Kyle, what's your take from all of this? Because it looks like they're trying to actively push her out. As a member of the media, do you think it's time for her to go?
No, absolutely not. I think she's adorably stupid and one of the most entertaining facets of this complete charade that goes on at the White House every day. And I think that the fact that she's a completely incredible liar, not in the sense that, you know, I think she's great at her job, but in the fact that nobody believes her, I think she's the perfect face of this administration because it's a complete puppet show. And I think that, you know, having a clown out in front of the circus is, you know, it's really on point. So I don't know who would be threatened by her and decide to lead a coup. And I guess Anita Dunn decided that she was done there. And, you know, I think they should keep her. I really do. This administration doesn't have any standards. So they're not, you know, so why bring in somebody who's going to actually be more competent at their job. You know, I think they should stick with her.
Yeah, well, I give up on a good thing. Allie.
To that point, though, you're probably right, because it takes some pressure off of the debacle that they have in the White House. So it might be helpful that everybody's talking about the press secretary and not the president and the staff that's running the White House.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Competence, that's a great point, because I think incompetence is the perfect subterfuge for the actual damage that this administration is doing to the country. So President Biden, he has this persona of being this incompetent buffoon who is just a gaffe machine. And so that actually provides him with a weird kind of cover for all of his terrible policies. I think so KJP and Biden are kind of a match made in hell, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how the American people see it for sure, Kyle. Speaking about all of this, because, well, Joe Biden is a wreck these days and they're really having a hard time covering for him. I want to bring up this Axios exclusive story that also came out today. Biden is changing up his walking routine these days to Marine One. Now, it's interesting, folks, because he usually walks by himself, but he's having trouble walking on grass these days. And according to their report, it's hard to do this with a straight face. According to their report, it's really bringing a lot of negative attention towards the fact that he's 81 years old and he's on a rapid decline. As you see here, he really struggles with walking on flat land. Allie, as a crisis manager, how do you handle this?
Or upstairs, or down the hallway, or anywhere really in between. I see this as a good thing for the staff. It was smart for them from a crisis manager perspective to kind of eliminate the gaffes when he's walking out towards the journalists and the media that are standing there, White House correspondents. However, it doesn't help the fact that he still doesn't walk very well when he has his entourage with him. And, you know, from a safety standpoint, I would much rather have somebody behind him to catch him when he falls rather than, you know, have him just flailing on the lawn. I mean, this just goes back to the fact that I feel like this is elder abuse, and I feel badly for the man as a human being, because he shouldn't be in this position and he really should be on the beach in retirement, you know.
Playing on the tanning. Well, we're hoping President Trump sends him to early retirement in November. Kyle, what's your takeaway from all of this? Because it's really interesting to see the comparison with both videos playing.
Sure. Well, I think this is another example of the Biden administration being about optics over substance. You recall that they had the White House, you know, pretend sets. So for an administration that complains so much about Russia, they really love their Potemkin villages, right? So this entourage out there just completely draws more attention to the fact that he's walking stiffly. I don't know if he has some kind of devices on his leg. They might as well go the full animatronic with him and give him the AI upgrade and just get a president who can actually complete his sentences. Pause.
It's so bad. It really is that bad. But guys, it's not just ending there. They're not the only two Democrats who are having a rough time these days. Former Congressman Adam Schiff, he's running for the Senate right now, Adam Schiff. He's having a rough one just out there on the campaign trail. We should probably bring some attention to this, because it looks like Adam Schiff was actually robbed in San Francisco and someone stole his suitcase, meaning that when he had to make an appearance, he couldn't be all buttoned down in a nice suit and tie. He had to show up. He still looks like a schmuck, as my dad would say, but he's at least there in presence. But listen, we have an actual photo of the suspects that we got exclusively. Take a look at the suspect. If you guys see anything, please call San Francisco PD. This man looks very familiar. I'm not sure if you guys know who he is. But if you do, definitely call San Francisco police. Allie?
Adam, I'm telling you, he's been gallivanting around the country looking for things to pick up. It couldn't have happened to a worse person, Adam Schiff. You know, when I worked on the Hill, you would get to know some of the members of Congress, and most certainly most of them were gracious and treated other people's staff really well. I was blessed to have a great boss that treated his staff well, but you know, you would hear rumblings of other people not being treated so well. And Adam Schiff was just not a kind person. And so whatever he gets, and I feel badly for this, he probably deserves, it's karma coming to get him back. You know, lying, manipulating the public and the media. And, you know, it just goes to show you a democratic city in a democratic state. And you wonder why all these people are saying, let's, you know, defund the police and nobody needs any attention to that. And, you know, thievery is okay as long as it's under a certain amount. But people are running out of Yves Saint Laurent and it's going to end up on some, you know, sale website that is about to, you know, new with tags, and they're going to make some money. And he obviously might have one of his old suits on there. We should check it for DNA though.
I don't want the job, Allie.
I don't want the job, but somebody should.
No, thanks. I will not volunteer myself or Kyle to do that, but maybe you, Allie, you got some free time these days. Maybe you could do it. Kyle, you have been following this story specifically, but you've also been noticing that there's a theme going on these days in California, specifically with crime. I know you mentioned the LA mayor has also been a victim of crime in Los Angeles. Tell us a little bit about that. That's strange, right?
Well, I think it's appropriate that Karen Bass was also burglarized this week, seeing that Adam Schiff had to show up to a meeting, looked like he was selling hunting and fishing equipment at a Bass Pro Shop. So the similarities between this, we have the San Jose mayor Mahan with one of the most hilarious bits of video I've ever seen. His so-called security had to get into a slap fight with a guy who is looking like Sugar Ray Leonard out there. Although I think maybe his pet name or his boyfriend's pet name, not assuming, not that there's anything wrong with that. It could be Sugar as well. This was a little kind of a fruity little slap fest.
It's not what you want from a bodyguard.
That's fine. I mean, it's a prototypical San Francisco, you know, like assault, you know, just a little, you know, a little bodily, little slap, little, you know, tap, tap. But, you know, I feel bad that bug-eyed Congressman Schiff had his, you know, Schiff stolen out of his car? No. Do I feel bad for Karen Bass? Not really. This is the second time that her home has been burglarized. In 2022, a couple of crooks broke into her home and stole two handguns out of her home. I mean, during a campaign. I mean, yeah. Of all the things for a San Francisco Democrat to have stolen out of her home, I mean, handguns, pretty amazing. The Oakland DA had his SUV broken into in October. So all of these Soros-funded DAs and their, you know, progressive mouthpieces are, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost for them. And I think it, you know, it should be a wake up call for them. But I think that they're probably going to hit the snooze bar and, you know, pay no attention and, you know, go back to, you know, they're not going to change their stuck on stupid policies, unfortunately.
They're not going to. And you mentioned what happened in front of the San Jose mayor, Matt Mahan. So let's take a listen to the video, because it's actually really laughable considering nobody was really hurt in this incident. So let's take a look.
I would not let him go in there if we can. I don't know.
You want me to say something stupid? Drop the N-word, just slap him in the face.
So I'm doing an interview, sir.
Are you doing an interview? Yeah. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I'm moving on. I work right there. I'm talking on the phone. You got a problem?
Yeah, we're just trying to do
it. Okay, cool. Thank you. Cool. I appreciate you, Shemaya. I'm going to go do what gonna do right before you walked up. You know what I'm saying? Either way it goes. First of all, hold up. What? No, bro. Hold up. Hold up. No. Let go.
Hold on a second. Let's go.
I'll smack you right now, bitch. I will smack you. You want to get smacked?
Okay, that's enough.
Hey!
Can you call one, please? Yeah. Back up. Hey, and you need to come to a lease right in front of Anchor. There's a fight between the mayor and
the officer who's been assaulted on First Street.
Okay, Allie, as a former employee and working with Congressman Matt Gaetz, would you hire that bodyguard? Because he didn't look very effective.
No, and I can't believe the slapping fight. You know, I can't. The other thing, too, is he, I mean, it would have been more effective if he took words out of Joe Biden's mouth and said, don't. Just don't. No, I hired real
challenge it to a push-up body, test.
Bodyguards that, you know, are licensed and are incredible individuals that would protect, not get in a slapping fight with a guy. So, you know.
There's no management
for this crisis. It's just fire someone and don't rehire them. He needs to be in the picket and in the unemployment line with the press secretary.
Yes, Kyle, you had something to say. I'll let you add it before we wrap this.
No, I just think that was the perfect San Francisco, you know, mean girls style junior high slap fight. It was adorable. But it was resolved without any serious injury, obviously. We kid the mayor, but you know, obviously San Francisco's got some more serious problems than this. And I think that, you know, what happened to Schiff, what happened to Karen Bass, you know, what happened to the mayor should have them stop denying that crime is a real problem for citizens in their area. And that's why we're drawing attention to these stories, like, you know, out there in the media, is so that the Democrats know that, you know, your leaders are in denial about the crime that's going on in cities like San Francisco and in LA.
Yeah, LA, San Francisco, that was San Jose. And, you know, back in the BLM riots, when those were going off in 2020, I was doing a fundraiser, and thankfully the folks on Twitter were actually kind enough to donate money. And we purchased dinners for a bunch of police departments around the country who were really getting a beat down. And San Jose was actually one of those police departments that we did send dinner to, because the rioting over there was pretty disgusting. So I can only imagine most of their officers have probably left the city just because they don't want to deal with that anymore. And we're seeing that, you know, happening all across the country. So I'm sure the response time wasn't that quick. It was interesting to see the mayor's delay too in all of it, and then how quickly he was able to push himself out of the situation, and he relied on that poor man to sacrifice himself into it. It's bizarre, but it's beta vibe, so it makes sense, I guess, these days. Allie, Kyle, thank you both for joining me. That was a pleasure discussing all those stories, and it's not easy going through them, of course, but you know, when we can catch a laugh with the news cycle these days, we try to take it. So thank you. Crazy news coming out of New York yesterday. The New York Appeals Court ruled that Harvey Weinstein, well, his rape conviction had to be overturned. Got a lot of people off, caught a lot of people off guard because, well, as many of you know, this was a very high-profile case. Now, he was charged and convicted in both New York and Los Angeles. And, well, the New York case was the first one and the big one. And so he successfully had that overturned. Now, specifically, the reason why the New York Court of Appeals ruled that they had to overturn it was because the judge in that case brought in women who were not, they didn't have anything to do with the case and why he was being tried, but they were apparently victims of Harvey Weinstein. And so that's the reason why they had to reverse and do the overturn. Now, the thing is, Manhattan prosecutor Alvin Bragg is saying he's going to prosecute him again. They're not going to let this go away. So that is being said, you know, all right, that's cool. But ultimately, guys, it's not stopping at New York. Harvey Weinstein's lawyers are also looking to have the LA conviction overturned. Now, currently he's sitting in jail because that LA conviction has him sentenced to 16 years in prison. No word if he's going to be transferred yet to Los Angeles County. But it's very, very interesting. And joining me to discuss all of this is Phil Holloway. He is the host of the Inside the Law, and it is a podcast and a show that you can find on YouTube. He's also a columnist with Town Hall and a lawyer. Phil, thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate your time. Your show is one of the best. I always tell people, we cited you actually a lot of times regarding your coverage on Fulton County. So we're very thankful that you're joining us today.
Well, I'm happy to be here. You know, this is obviously this is an important subject. And one thing that I love to do is help people understand what's good and what's bad and what's ugly sometimes about our justice system.
Yeah. And this one might be considered a little ugly. That's sarcasm, of course, because it's hard to understand how this judge in the Harvey Weinstein New York case messed up this badly by having women and victims come forward during the trial and having them speak in front of the jury when they weren't the ones who were who were having their case laid out. And so obviously that does taint the jury pool. Do you think the New York Appeals Court got this right?
Yeah, I do think they got it right. And of course, the trial judge got it wrong. But this actually, and I want people to understand, this is not about Harvey Weinstein. This affects his case and it affects him, but it's about the right to a fair trial, which is what you have and what I have, what President Trump has, and anybody else who is a defendant in the criminal justice system. You have a right to a fair trial. And what happens, unfortunately, is a lot of times we see prosecutors and judges who seem to forget about that. I blame about half of this on the prosecutor and the other half on the judge for letting this happen. A good prosecutor, you know, when I was a prosecutor, a wise older guy told me, look, kind of like a mentor, don't overtry your case. You don't need to put in cumulative evidence. You don't need to put in evidence that's maybe on shaky grounds in terms of admissibility. Maybe you can talk this trial judge into it, but don't risk getting reversed on appeal by putting in too much stuff. And so what we see in these types of cases is we see prosecutors when they have a relatively weak case, like I think the basic case with Weinstein was weak. I don't know if he's guilty or innocent, but that's not really the point. The point is he didn't get a fair trial because the prosecutor had a weak case. They brought in lots of other women who were going to say, yeah, you know, he did it to me too, and he did all kinds of terrible stuff, regardless of whether or not there was any corroboration of what they had to say, regardless of whether there was any merit to it, whether it doesn't matter if the police had even investigated it. But they brought in all these people that had nothing to do with the underlying charge, and they did it to smear him, to make him look bad, to make him look like a monster, so that they could ensure the jury would convict him on that basis rather than on what he was on trial actually for.
Yeah, and I think that's the really important part for folks to remember at home. Listen, I don't feel any type of way about this being overturned because I do think, like you said, he deserves a right to have a fair trial. Now, the allegations were piling up on him. If folks at home remember, this is during the Me Too movement. I mean, he pretty much launched the Me Too movement, and a lot of people just were kind of riding that wave. And, you know, Alvin Bragg is the same Manhattan District Attorney's office who prosecuted Harvey Weinstein, but he's also going after President Trump, and he like did some type of like legal gymnastics to get those charges pushed onto the president. And well, again, the statute was up. They were originally misdemeanors anyway, but he somehow was able to bump them up to felonies. So this is not really unheard of by this prosecutor. They do have a habit of doing this. And I think a lot of Americans need to remember this. It's a high profile case. Prosecutors, they want to be, I guess, have an established, well-known perspective on all of this. They want people to know who they are. Actually, I don't even think it was Bragg, just to correct myself. I think it was Vance, who his predecessor before him, who tried this one. But ultimately, folks, it's the same Manhattan DA's office. These were all left-wing prosecutors, again, and they were just reckless with this case. And I have to say, I don't agree with Harvey Weinstein and the allegations that came out against him. I understand that they are egregious, but you have a right to have your trial heard, to have your case heard in front of a jury. And unfortunately, he did not have that. There was a lot of public pushing that was going on behind all of this, and it might have added to the reason why prosecutors kept just bringing in people who they shouldn't have brought into this case in the first place. So it's interesting to see it play out. I'm interested to see how it's going to be when they retry him. We'll have to see. But I want to bring on something else that happened yesterday, or the day before, I should say. It has to do with Arizona. In Arizona, the AG over there, she just got 18 members of both President Trump's legal team and then also just regular Arizona state Republican officials indicted. They're saying that there's like this fake scheme to cook up electors. I thought it was pretty interesting, Phil, but you posted this clip of Van Jones from CNN just the other day. Let's take a listen to that clip, and then I want to hear your reaction on the other side of this.
Let's say one of the candidates questions the legitimacy of the state's count. The governor could choose not to certify the electors' votes, or, though this is really unlikely, the state legislature could decide to contest the election and send a different count to Congress, meaning Congress could end up with no results or with competing results from the same state. Now, that's a violation of federal law, so Congress would no longer have to honor that state's electors at all. Now, the House and the Senate can then decide which result is valid or throw out the votes from that state altogether.
Okay, Phil, I'm not an attorney, so this is where I'm going to have to ask you. It sounds like he is describing what these 18 defendants are being charged with. Is that correct? And is there anything illegal to what they were doing in Arizona?
In my opinion, there's nothing illegal about it. And it goes back to, I think, 1959, when you had the presidential race heating up between John Kennedy and Richard Nixon, okay, maybe 1960, but it was in that election when this actually happened, and you had a situation in Hawaii where there were two competing, you know, slates of electors, and, you know, at some point, they resolved the election dispute, so they wound up only sending one slate to Washington, but because they were able to have two slates of electors ready to go, once the election dispute was resolved, they had some electoral votes to count, because if you don't have them in place, then you risk losing, the state risks losing all of the electors. So this is not exactly an unheard of legal theory. It might be a long shot, but this is also some of what Fani Willis has done here in Fulton County, Georgia, as part of that giant racketeering case. So they call these things, you know, the fake electors, when what they are, they are alternate electors, and it's part of a now tested, all the way back into the Nixon-Kennedy race, it's a tested kind of a thing. It's something that, as you saw Van Jones explain, you know, the election of president and vice president does not occur in the ballot box in the various states. It occurs in the Congress with the Electoral College. And so that is when the true election is. And so if you believe that you have maybe a valid claim that the election was somehow invalid, you don't have time to have a traditional litigation, because look, the election is early November, and depending on, you know, how long it takes them to count all the mail-in ballots and all this stuff, it could be days or even weeks before anything is possibly certified. And then you've got a very early date in December, by which time the states have to have the slate of electors sent to Washington. They're not counted until January, but they got to be there in early November. And so that's a hard deadline. And if you don't have time to run a lawsuit, you're not going to have time to do discovery and all this. So when you have like a really, really short window of opportunity, lawyers have to think outside the box and get creative. That's what they did in Hawaii with the Nixon-Kennedy race. That's what Van Jones was talking about. That's what lawyers did in Georgia and in Arizona. So in my view, what they're doing is they are criminalizing the practice of law. When you get a bunch of lawyers around in a room and you're trying to figure out how to resolve something, and it's, let's just say you're in a unique position, something that nobody's ever experienced before, they brainstorm, they send emails around, they toss it around and figure out what's the best strategy. It may not be a good one, it might be a long shot, but you've got to come up with something. So that's what was going on here. I think this was lawyers being lawyers, lawyers practicing law. There was no intent to commit any kind of a crime. They thought that they were following the playbook that was established all the way back in the Kennedy election, when he was running against Nixon.
Yeah, I think it's really important to bring up, and you brought up the lawyer aspect of this. I'm looking at the indictments, and I see just four popping off that I know were his attorneys: Christina Bob, John Eastman, Jenna Ellis, Rudy Giuliani. Now, as a lawyer, Phil, you go and you get hired by a client, and you're defending your client. What would it do? Well, I guess what would it do to other attorneys if they saw that you were being prosecuted for simply just giving your client a defense? Would other lawyers even want to start defending cases like this or similar to your, because it just doesn't make any sense. It seems like it's being used to intimidate other lawyers from potentially coming forward and representing Trump if he has a dispute, let's say in November as well.
Well, I think it would have a chilling effect on other lawyers trying to do what they need to do for their client. We have an ethical obligation to be, you know, zealous advocates for our client. And, you know, there are limits to that, but we have to be zealous. And I think if you have something like this, and it's always in the back of the lawyer's mind, and you wonder, okay, now, if I really advise my client what I think they really need to do, am I going to wind up indicted by some local district attorney who just doesn't like my legal theory? You know, if you don't like a legal theory, you know, fight about it in court. That's what courtrooms are for. But you don't weaponize the justice system in a way to indict lawyers for doing what lawyers do.
Yeah. And I think that's really important that everyone understands that, because I think that's the real reason why they're going after all these attorneys. And it's really upsetting because it's not what we do in this country. Phil, thank you for joining us. I want to remind our audience that your show is available on YouTube. Again, folks, it's Inside the Law. Check it out. I watch it. That's how I, you know, learn all my stuff about Fulton County. I'm not a lawyer. I just pretend to be. So Phil, I appreciate all the work that you do. And I'm glad we had you on. We look forward to having you back in the future. We just wanted to take a moment to remind our audience that this is an independent show and I am an independent journalist, which means that we strongly rely on you, the viewer, for donations. Now, we're not taking any money from Big Pharma or any other sketchy big corporations, so we strongly rely on you. So if you'd like to support us, head over to supportbree.com. That's supportbre.com. You can make a one-time donation or make a monthly donation, and you get to pick the dollar amount. So again, folks, it's supportbree.com. If you'd like to support our work, we greatly appreciate it. We'll be right back with plenty of more to discuss. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. And under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend, Dr. Kirk Elliott, because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure. And he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. Now, you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. I want to let our audience in on a little secret. I'm saving hundreds of dollars each year after switching over both of my lines to Patriot Mobile. Yes, so now my business and personal line are with Patriot Mobile. Now, Patriot Mobile uses the same towers that you're probably already using now, except it's less expensive. So my 5G towers that I love to use my old provider, I'm still using them now. I'm just paying significantly less money to do so. And on top of it all, Patriot Mobile believes in the same things you and I believe in. They have the same morals. So they donate to causes that are like pro-life causes, veteran causes, and even the NRA. It's incredible. So I highly recommend you head over to patriotmobile.com right now, take a look at their plans, and sign up. And today, if you sign up and use promo code Brianna, they're going to waive the activation fee. Yes, you heard it right. They're going to waive the activation fee. Just make sure you use promo code Brianna, B-R-E-A-N-N-A. Well, there's no surprise here, of course. All of those college pro-Hamas protests are, looks like, being funded by George Soros. And it's all because of a new New York Post article that we just recently got our hands on. It highlights the fact that George Soros, his funding is mainly being used to fund three of the big ones right now that are popping off. And we talk about it all the time. These protests are anti-Semitic, and there's no other way to look at it. And these college kids aren't very intelligent, even though they're coming from Ivy League schools. I mean, we played it yesterday. The one student from Columbia who had no idea that what she was even doing in the NYU. And then she's sitting here talking about it. And she's just like, you know, why are we here? Why are we here? Anyone know why we're here? We were just asked to come here. So we were all a little confused as to who was directing all of it. And it looks like it's a group called the USA Campaign for Palestine Rights. Now, they've received over $300,000 from George Soros himself, and that money is being spread all across the country. Now, many of you recall, these protests started at Columbia, and they've just started popping up in other states and cities, and, well, it's been getting kind of crazy. We see police ripping up their tents, all these videos coming out of them ripping up their tents, trying to confront them to get off campus, and it's just been interesting seeing this all play out. Now, some of these paid activists are making anywhere from $2,880 to $3,660. And they're being called campus-based fellows. Yes, they're calling them. And they're being asked to do at least 8 hours of work to get that compensation. And, well, of course, they're doing just that. Now, obviously, not all the protesters there are paid for. It's not very specific as to how many are being paid. But it's interesting to see how it's being organized. But we've been asking how these protests are being organized. I know I've reached out to the FBI, specifically the DOJ, to see if they're actually investigating a lot of these protests because, well, they are saying extremely hateful things and they are calling for genocide. And so this would probably be something that the FBI would deem as a hate crime. But the FBI doesn't want to get back to us on that. And Christopher Wray, earlier this week, the FBI director said that the FBI doesn't investigate protests and follow protesters. So we've kind of been up in the air on a lot of this. Now, we're not the only ones asking questions, of course. America First Legal has been asking questions specifically to Joe Biden's Department of Education, and they just want to know specific things, get specific records. Well, according to them, the DOE has been obstructing their records request for these pro-Hamas college rallies, and now they filed a lawsuit. Joining us to discuss is Dan Epstein. He is the vice president of America First Legal. Dan, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad AFL is jumping on this because we had so many questions, especially from the DOE angle from all of this. Why are they even allowing this to take place in the first place? It's always been something that has drawn my curiosity. So specifically with this lawsuit that you guys just recently filed, what are you guys looking to find out? And how is the DOE, as you guys are calling it, obstructing your records request?
Yeah, so Brianna, thank you so much for having me. At America First Legal, we do a lot of work to uncover facts that the American people have a right to know about. Two things that we did last fall was, first, in October, we made a request to the Department of Education just to understand, you fund a lot of these campuses. Even private campuses get a lot of government funding. And what we wanted to know is, what are you doing as part of your Office of Civil Rights to make sure that federal civil rights laws are being protected on campus? The Department of Education never responded to that Freedom of Information Act. Then a couple months later, in December of 2023, America First Legal asked the Department of Education, well, it looks like a lot of the protesters are actually not American citizens. They're foreign nationals. A lot of those foreign nationals are here on visas. What information do you have about whether these individuals are complying with Department of Education regulations and other federal regulations regarding the acts and practices of those who are foreign nationals? The Department of Education, on that Freedom of Information Act request, failed to respond. That is why yesterday, based off months of non-response, of no records being produced to America First Legal, has decided to sue. And what we're asking is for the Department of Education to be held accountable, to give information to the American public that AFL is going to look to educate folks about the fact that, quite honestly, the Department of Education has done nothing that is required to do as a matter of law to protect students, particularly Jewish students on campus. And the Department of Education is not holding those foreign nationals with visas accountable for making sure that we are exercising oversight to ensure that laws are being enforced.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I'm glad you guys are doing something about that because it's really, it's interesting to see how, or who's showing up to this, these protests in the first place. Specifically, you know, these students, a lot of them are on F1 student visas. And I think that's important for our audience to understand. If they are violating any of those terms for being here, which ones specifically would they be violating for just partaking in these protests that, I mean, they are calling for genocide. There's no other way to look at this. So yeah. What would they specifically be violating in those terms?
Yeah. So the threshold question, Brianna, that's a great question. And the threshold question is are these protests really protected under the First Amendment? We have a long list of cases like O'Brien, which is a major Supreme Court case that says that if you're using fighting words and those fighting words are not merely expression, there's no artistic, scientific, educational purpose behind them. And it really is to effectively threaten and not just threaten violence, but threaten potentially death. Then you are accepted from First Amendment protection. And that creates a large presumption that these are violent domestic acts and may even be classified as domestic terrorism. At that point, if foreign nationals on F1 visas are engaged in domestic terrorism, that becomes an immediate issue that justifies deportation. So there are very strict legal rules that apply. The rule of law says if you're a foreign national, you support terrorism, you can no longer be in this country. It is incumbent upon the U.S. Department of Education to get the facts on those issues, to develop those facts, and to disclose them to the public. Because if the Biden administration is not deporting individuals who are advocating for terrorist acts and acts of violence against American citizens, they need to be held accountable. And the public has a right to know about that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've spoken about this on the show. It's really hard with this administration to get documents and FOIA requests completed by them because they don't want to do it. They want you to take them to court for it and they want to drag it on. They you know, pretend like they're the most transparent administration, but they really aren't. And it's really upsetting to continue to have to file lawsuits because I filed two so far against them because I want these questions to be answered. And they just don't want this kind of transparency. Now, I've been following a lot of these campus protests and I'm noticing a theme here. We're seeing a lot of college professors and other staff and members of the administration getting arrested as well for participating in this. What do you think the DOA could be doing to kind of penalize those professors or those employees who are participating in these so-called protests?
Yeah, I think there's two things. I mean, the most obvious is America First Legal is lucky to have the former general counsel of the Department of Education as our senior vice president. That's Reid Rubenstein. When he was in the Trump administration, Reid Rubenstein was very aggressive in holding universities accountable for two things. Number one, you take federal money, which means that you are bound by certain federal civil rights laws. And that means that the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, which ensures equality and non-discrimination at every university that takes federal funds, ensures that those laws are being enforced. We clearly have a Biden administration that's not enforcing them. And that's a big problem. That's number one. That's something that should be subjecting the Biden administration to massive amounts of accountability, whether in the courts or through Congress. Number two is that these schools, the agenda that these professors all know about, that the administration of these schools all know about, is that Qatar and other major Middle Eastern countries are funding these schools at a tremendous amount. The Federal Department of Education, as a matter of law passed by Congress and signed by the president, requires that every university disclose its foreign funding to the U.S. Department of Education. Surprise, surprise, the overwhelming majority of universities have not done that. Even private institutions have to disclose that. The Department of Education during the Trump administration actively sought to get public disclosure on this. The Biden administration ended those attempts to figure this out. And the Biden administration has no interest in getting disclosures about the enormous amount of foreign funding, particularly from Qatar, particularly from China, going to U.S. academic institutions. And so it's no surprise that we have university administrators and university faculty that actually know well that getting Jewish students off campus, getting Jewish donors out of those schools is going to have a non-significant effect on the ability for those schools to continue to get millions of dollars of funding from foreign nations and the ability to get foreign national students to pay full price tuition at these schools.
Well, so that's a great point, Dan. I actually didn't even think about that. I thought just based off the donors who were pulling out that this might be something that the school have to actually answer to. And you bring up a great point that probably won't work because they're getting donations from other countries, which is disturbing government. So that is disturbing. Dan, thank you for everything America First Legal is doing. We're so happy you guys are pushing back. And we look forward to seeing this lawsuit pan out and you guys getting your hands on those documents that you guys are rightfully supposed to be handed because it is one of our, you know, rights that get access to this when you submit a FOIA request. So thank you, Dan. Thank you for seeking the right answers. We're looking forward to hearing the update on this story when it does come. So thank you. As we discussed yesterday, the Supreme Court heard opening arguments regarding the president's immunity from prosecution, obviously. It seemed to have gone really, really well. Just from the outside looking in, it sounded like the majority of them were open to the argument that the president does have immunity from prosecution. President Donald Trump called into Newsmax yesterday to discuss his arguments as well. Take a listen.
But you can't do what you have to do and then all of a sudden get indicted and go through a process like I go through. You have to have immunity. You need presidential immunity to do the right thing. And sometimes you may do the wrong thing. I mean, that's possible, too. But you have to have immunity.
You have to have immunity. And that's a fair argument. Anyone would understand that, especially as the president of the United States. You need that level of immunity to be able to conduct your job properly. Joining us to discuss all of this is a man who was in the room when the hearings were going on. Let's bring in Mike Davis. He is the founder of Article 3 Project. Mike, you were there yesterday. I heard you were out there selling a lot of different media outlets that you think this will go in favor of the president. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think after listening to the Supreme Court's questions during oral argument yesterday, it is very clear that there are at least five votes, maybe six, depending on how Justice Amy Coney Barrett comes down for a very limited ruling that the president of the United States, any president of the United States, is immune from criminal prosecution for his official acts, not his personal acts, his official acts. And I think the Supreme Court and their questioning understood that if you do not provide that protections, those protections to a president, it's going to destroy the presidency. It's going to destroy his ability to do his job if he has to live in fear that his successor will prosecute him for his official acts, and therefore it will destroy the presidency. Federal judges have immunity from criminal prosecution for their official acts. So do members of Congress. Why the hell would the president of the United States?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, too. I couldn't understand how you can argue against that. Justice Alito also kind of hinted at that as well. Let's take a listen.
I'm sure you would agree with me that a stable democratic society requires that a candidate who loses an election, even a close one, even a hotly contested one, leave office peacefully if that candidate is the incumbent.
Of course.
All right. Now, if an incumbent who loses a very close, hotly contested election knows that a real possibility after leaving office is not that the president is going to be able to go off into a peaceful retirement, but that the president may be criminally prosecuted by a bitter political opponent, will that not lead us into a cycle that destabilizes the functioning of our country as a democracy? And we can look around the world and find countries where we have seen this process, where the loser gets thrown in jail.
So I think it's exactly the opposite, Justice Alito. There are lawful mechanisms to contest the results in an election, and outside the record, but I think of public knowledge, petitioner and his allies filed dozens of electoral challenges, and my understanding is lost all but one that was not outcome determinative in any respect. There were judges that said in order to sustain substantial claims of fraud that would overturn an election result that's certified by a state, you need evidence, you need proof. And none of those things were manifested.
Okay, Mike, so it sounds like they're getting to the core of this, that a bitter opponent of President Trump is going after him, which is obviously Joe Biden. He's using the Department of Justice to do so. Do you see this being an issue? Let's say President Trump, which I do believe, is going to win in November. How would Joe Biden feel if he was being prosecuted next by the new DOJ?
Yeah, I mean, they're running a criminal conspiracy to violate rights, to violate President Trump's civil rights. The civil rights of Walt Nauta, his co-defendant, the civil rights of 18 co-defendants in Georgia, the civil rights of Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, the civil rights of John Eastman and Jeff Clark, his lawyers, his top advisors, his lawyers, these January 6th defendants. This is obviously a criminal conspiracy to violate rights. And I would say this, if the Supreme Court does not hold that the president is immune from criminal prosecution for their official acts, does that mean the Trump 47 Justice Department can prosecute President Obama and his legal advisor at the time, David Barron, who's now a judge on the First Circuit Court of Appeals for capital murder, for their extrajudicial drone strike on two Americans, including a minor? Does it mean that the Trump 47 Justice Department can prosecute President Biden for his illegal mass parole of 10 million unvetted illegal immigrants into our country and their resulting crimes? Does it mean we could be bipartisan here? Does it mean that the Trump 47 Justice Department can prosecute President Bush 43 and Vice President Cheney? I see Liz Cheney likes to run her mouth, including with the New York Times. Does that mean the Trump 47 Justice Department can prosecute Bush 43 and Cheney for their reckless, at best, reliance on faulty intel? Some would say they lied about intel that led to the invasion in Iraq and more than 100,000 deaths. Do they really want to go down this path? Do we really want to go down this path as a country where we destroy our presidency and therefore destroy our country?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know Justice Kavanaugh asked that same question about the drone attacks regarding Barack Obama, and they kind of dismissed it as if that's not going to ever happen. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But you also mentioned January 6th. I think that's a key point here. You know, we discussed how a DC appeals court kind of tossed aside the enhancements for one J6er, saying that they were wrongfully applied to his sentencing. And then we heard from the DOJ, specifically U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves, saying that he's going to try to amp up the lesser charges when they're requesting sentences on those for those who do have the enhancements overturned. Julie Kelly is really putting a flag on this, saying that now judges are also looking to step it up a notch too. So for our audience at home who aren't, you know, lawyers, how does this work? How, if they do get the enhancements tossed out for all of these J6ers, because, you know, the appeals court did say they were wrongfully applied, how are they then able to go back on the lesser charges and ask for more time?
Julie Kelly has been doing a fantastic job for nearly 4 years in the trenches, in the rat's nest of the DC District Court and the DC Circuit Court, exposing what these Democrat judges and frankly, even Republican judges are doing to these January 6th defendants. They are being persecuted, no question. The Biden Justice Department contorted a post-Enron statute, 1512, that was passed and enact it to go after corporate obstruction of justice, corporate document shredding, and the related crimes. It was never intended to be used against political enemies. And in the Biden Justice Department, Jack Smith, Matthew Graves, this Democrat U.S. attorney in D.C. have politicized and weaponized this federal obstruction of justice statute after Enron to go after Trump, with two of the four charges that Jack Smith brought against Trump for January 6th, along with these January 6th defendants. What happened on January 6th was a lawful protest permitted by the National Park Service that devolved into a riot. And the people who were there peacefully had the First Amendment right to be there, even if you disagreed with them, even if you hate them, they had the First Amendment right to be there. The people who trespassed should have been charged with trespass, and the people who were violent should have been charged with violence. But then the Biden Justice Department used this 1512 to go after these Trump supporters, Trump and these Trump supporters, based upon this bogus, contorted reading, bad faith reading, malicious reading of 1512 to go after Trump and his supporters with these extreme sentences, right? So you're getting some of these sentences are for years for people who were participating in January 6th, 20 plus years for some of the worst actors, right? And the Supreme Court is going to almost certainly reverse many of these criminal convictions with the Fisher case that will be decided by the end of June. And then that will have serious effect on two of four of Jack Smith's charges against President Trump. And so these Democrat prosecutors and these Democrat judges in D.C. and even some of these Republican judges in D.C. are outrageously saying that they're essentially just going to ignore this ruling by the Supreme Court. And then they're, instead of sentencing these January 6th defendants concurrently, like if they're charged with five or six different misdemeanors where you have up to 6 months each, instead of doing the normal thing where you sentence for the misdemeanors, you would sentence them concurrently for up to 6 months, they're going to stack these convictions consecutively. So you, instead of having, you know, 6 months for six different misdemeanors, they could put them in prison for 36 months for these misdemeanors, because they're trying to do an end run around the Supreme Court. And they're even threatening to punish these January 6th defendants for even raising this issue, raising their appellate rights based upon this Fisher ruling. This is outrageous what they're doing, that they are ignoring the Supreme Court and they are punishing these January 6th defendants for exercising their legal rights. Again, this is a criminal conspiracy by these Biden prosecutors and these judges and these Democrat operatives to violate the civil rights of these January 6th defendants. This is unacceptable.
Yeah, it is unacceptable. And it's disgusting that they're doing this to a lot of veterans as well. On Monday on our show, we're actually having a sit down, an exclusive interview with Sergeant Ken Harrelson. Ken Harrelson's one of those J6ers who was tried during the Oath Keepers trial. And we know that the DOJ put two witnesses on the stand who completely lied Officer Harry Dunn and Officer David Lazarus. And he's finally being able to speak out about that. But he got that enhancement slapped on him as well. And he's going to speak out about that now that he's finally free. Mike Davis, thank you for everything that you do. We greatly appreciate your time as always. Keep going out there and fighting the good fight. And if you enjoyed that interview, make sure you hit that subscribe button right now and make sure your notifications are turned on because, well, next week, specifically on Monday, we have a big, big exclusive story that's going to drop. So you don't want to miss that. And if you like this show, make sure you give us a 5-star review or a thumbs up, depending upon what platform you're using to watch and stream this. And leave us some feedback. We love hearing from you. So drop a comment and we will greatly appreciate any kind of input that you have for us, of course. We'll be right back. I want to tell you guys about my friend Allie. Allie is always complaining about her feet hurting because she's always in heels and working on them. And so I gifted her the new My Slippers 2.0. And let me tell you something, guys. It's been a complete game changer for Allie. You see, Allie tells me now it feels like she's walking on clouds because these slippers are so soft and the cushioning on them is perfect. She is so happy with her new My Slippers 2.0 that she's bragging about it to everyone. And, well, if you go on MyPillow.com right now, you'll notice that everyone's talking about these slippers. They're incredible. So right now, you have to head over to MyPillow.com and secure your slippers right now. Now, if you want to save up to 66% off, you got to do it by using promo code Brianna. That's B-R-E-A-N-N-A. Again, make sure you're using promo code Brianna if you want to secure your 66% off and get them now before they sell out.
To celebrate the new year, we're having the biggest sale ever on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, save 60% on our Goose Down Comforters, the best comforters ever. They go perfectly with our MyPillow bed sheets and duvet covers. Save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels. They're made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Our initial quantities are extremely low, so get them now before they go. Our seasonal flannel sheets are finally in. You save up to 50% and they sell out fast every year, so order now. They're truly the best flannel sheets you'll ever sleep on. Or save up to 80% on all our clearance items. And this is where it gets even better. For a limited time, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all MyPillow products. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Tonight, I jumped on the Flyover Conservative podcast with David Whited, and we had a great discussion. Take a listen.
All right, Flyover family, you know what time it is. I'm flying solo today, so hopefully I'm up to the occasion. This is our chance to be able to look at the current news cycle, which is wacko, crazy, and with more elements in it than ever before that are very interesting. And you got to break down the thing behind the thing. A person's doing this, but why are they doing that? Why are they pushing this legislation? Why are they going that direction? That's the stuff you get when you look at news through the eyes of a professional news producer. She's former Fox News, left them because she said, you know what? I'm not going to take your forced mandate and I can blaze my own trail. She's been a producer with Newsmax, Major League Baseball, kind of you name it, and is an incredible Substack, incredible show of her own. And it's a great way to be able to, again, poke at the news cycle and kind of see not just the thing they're telling you, but why are they telling you that and what's the next move? The host of the Brianna Morello Show, the one, the only Brianna Morello.
David, it's not easy doing this on your own, but you're crushing it. So congratulations.
So far, so good. I tell you what, you know, we go through your Twitter feed and we're kind of examine all this stuff. And so it's always kind of like fresh to the minute news. And I love your show because, you know, we kind of fly at maybe 50,000 feet looking more like culture, current events, you know, at that. But you're kind of down in the muck, in the nitty gritty, like interviewing people from, you know, Jim Jordan to lawmakers to newsmakers all the way around every single day. And in, you know, you're in there wrestling with the pigs, you know, and putting the news out. And we're so thankful for what you're doing because you had the ability to say, you know what, I can buy my own microphone and I can do these myself. I don't need the Fox News machine behind me. And I tell you what, truth in your ability to break that apart and look at the things has just increased in value because it's become so rare. If diamonds washed up on the beach, they'd be as cheap as sand. Anytime something's rare, it becomes more valuable. And your ability to break down stories is really the best there is on Rumble or any platform out there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's not easy. There's a lot going through, especially nowadays with in talks of just the news cycle. It seems to be switching every couple of hours, and so it writes itself, but it's interesting at least.
I encourage, Flyover family, go to BrianaBarilo.com. There's also a way that you can support her, because you're doing that with Fox and other places. If you don't know it, like, they're brought to you by Pfizer, brought to you by all the people that they're kind of trying to, supposed to be, independent journalists of. And if you like the kind of reporting that she's doing, you can go there and support her, $5 a month, $7 a month, $20 a month, or just a one-time donation. But the work that she does, going to DC, going to Rumble headquarters, having these kind of conversations, she went to Dallas to follow a case. She's doing this all on her own, and remains the kind of autonomy that allows this to be possible. So if you want to get behind that, way you can do it, go to supportbree.com, and encourage you to go to BriannaMarillo.com. That's how you can get a launching pad into her Substack, her Rumble channel. But her Twitter following has been huge, because you've been building that the whole time when you were working at, for the machine. And then when you stepped out, you just said, hey, the gloves are off, and I'm gonna tell my stories. And the first one I jump in here is, the news cycle has shifted. The media and our politicians want us to focus on these pro-Hamas college protests. What are they trying to redirect you from looking at? And that's an interesting question that I don't hear anybody else asking. What do you mean by that? And when you see these protests on campuses, what are you seeing that we're not seeing?
Yeah, well, we're heading into an election year. 4 years ago, we had the Summer of Love, and we saw how politicians were able to manipulate the media and have the media manipulate the American people into creating chaos in our society. And they were doing so, and everyone was getting super emotional about it. And so I think we need to remember that 4 years ago that was happening, and yet again it's happening as we're looking to head towards November. So I think a lot of people need to be on high alert for just emotional stories that are kind of getting people involved and getting them out there on the streets. Now, ultimately, these pro-Hamas protesters who are going nuts in these college campuses, I am not bothered by it as much. And here's why. Number one, they do have a right to protest. Now, hear me out. I understand that a lot of people are saying that they don't have a right to be there if it's private property and the school doesn't, they weren't licensed to have a protest, they can't be there. But these colleges, these universities, they raise these machines, these kids who they've manipulated their minds into thinking just this, this is their fault. So they need to figure out and dig their way out of it. Instead of using law enforcement, state resources, county resources, they have their own police department. Let them handle it. I'm so tired of seeing other members of other law enforcement agencies get dragged into this, because we all know in New York, for an example, Attorney General Tish James actually went after the NYPD after the Summer of Love and sided with the protesters and actually forced the NYPD to give over a settlement, when in fact they shouldn't have had to do that at all. There shouldn't have been the violence that took place at all. And for some reason, still our top attorney in the state sided with the violent protesters. So I don't want to open up law enforcement to any more liabilities when they have to. So that's another angle of all of it. But also remember this weekend, and they specifically waited to this weekend, or last weekend, I should say, to push forward foreign aid funding, over $95 billion worth of it. And of course, more than half of it goes to Ukraine. Then the rest goes to Taiwan, and it goes to Israel. And then they're giving it to NGOs as well. I believe it's $3.5 billion is going to NGOs to keep bringing more illegals into our country. And so what I mean by that is Speaker Mike Johnson has a black eye, because it does nothing for conservatives. It does nothing for Republicans. It was him just pretty much falling to his knees and just saying, okay, whatever you guys want, we'll do for you. And I think people need to realize that yesterday he was actually at Columbia University speaking about the protests and then was doing a media tour. And so what that does is it doesn't have people asking questions about the foreign aid funding anymore. The media is no longer asking about it. Now they're focused on what he's telling them to focus on, and that's the Columbia protests. And so I think people need to kind of just look at it from that angle. This is being used to kind of deflect the attention from what he's been doing these last couple of weeks, even waiving your Fourth Amendment rights. So I think people need to pay attention to that.
All right, let's frame it like that then. So as a magician, you'd be like getting somebody distracted with this hand, and then they don't see what they're doing with this hand. So that's kind of how you're framing it. Like, okay, this is happening, but it's meant to be a distraction from the bigger thing that's happening. It's like, you know, throwing a rock over there and then attacking over here. It's like distracting somebody. But let's stick just with the Hamas protesting alone. What is your stance? And there's a lot of controversy in the comments of your tweets on this, of like, okay, then they're calling for the genocide of a people group. You know, so is that fine? You know, where do we let, how do you look at a college campus? Do you look at it being like its own independent little country that should be run by the administration, and whatever happens there, they make their bed, they sleep in it, you know, and just kind of let them suffer the repercussions. You look at Columbia University, we're showing clips of it there a second ago, and I think they've now canceled all physical classes and they've gone virtual for the rest of the year. We had a parenting philosophy when our kids were growing up, and it was like, simply, I'm going to give you the opportunity to control yourself. When we go into a store, when we ride in the car, if you can't control yourself, then we will. So if our kids couldn't control their hands, then their hands were in timeout, you know, because or their hands are in their pockets when we're in a store. Like everything, you know, it just scales down, you know, till eventually, like if I can't control how I drive, police are going to pull me over. And, you know, if you can't control yourself, someone else does. So you just think each campus should be treated with autonomy and let their own policies create the fruit of those decisions?
Yeah. So first off, I don't agree with what they're saying. And I do want to emphasize that. And I've always been very clear about that I don't agree with these pro Hamas. That's also why I refer to them as pro Hamas rather than pro Palestine, because that's what they want to be referred as to, but they're not, they're siding with terrorists. Right. So that's the first thing that needs to be driven home over there. And I think a lot of people get very emotional about it, and in some cases, rightfully so. But the reality of it is these schools need to be held accountable, right? These schools need to go after these students who are making comments referring to genocide, and we've seen it before. They're using like Malcolm X terms to whatever, by whatever means necessary, and that's unacceptable. But the school should be getting rid of these students, right? They should be forced out of the school for doing that. The school doesn't want to get involved. The school's just sitting here and playing down the middle and doesn't want any involvement in any of this. And that's not acceptable. So there's different avenues you could go through about that. I would definitely tell students that, number one, if my school was allowing that stuff to happen, I would leave. I've spoken to people who have gone to Columbia, NYU, and other schools that are going through this right now, and they've just pulled their donations from them. And the money speaks volumes. And so eventually the school's going to have to answer when everyone starts taking their money. But I guess the point I want to drive home here is we now live in a society where the government gets to decide, they think they get to decide what is dangerous free speech and what isn't. And I think that's kind of the line where I'm just getting like, I don't want to touch it, because I personally believe what they're saying is wrong. Yes. But if you ask somebody else from their perspective on it, they'll tell you that it's not wrong, right? So we're seeing that play out right now in our government, where they're saying, well, what happened on January 6th? What was said, what was done that day was wrong because the other people don't agree with you. And so I would say that it's really, really hard to kind of dictate and play it down the middle on that stuff. And I, for one, wouldn't want to be the person doing so. But I think we need to start educating younger people. I think that they've been completely brainwashed by the schools. They have no idea what they're arguing. You know, there was a tweet that I also posted of a young student who was being
asked. We're gonna play that clip. Luke Radowski retweeted it. You said, the perfect political prop, ignorant, liberal, white, and female. And let's just play that clip, and then let's get your comment on that, because this is kind of what's growing.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either. I came from
Columbia. I was there up at Columbia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
Okay, so she doesn't know exactly why she's there, but they've preached this ideology that there's the oppressors and the oppressed. And I think in a lot of their minds, like, Israel's a thriving nation, doing well economically, they have a functioning society, and then you've got these Hamas terrorists it's the political party basically of the opposition, and they're not doing as well. These people are, you know, it's so no matter what happens in this conflict, I think it's seen through that lens of oppressor oppressed, you know? And so I think they're just kind of like, well, because if you went down the agenda of Hamas's demands, they wouldn't probably sign with their position on gays. They wouldn't, you know, be on board with their position on any of these issues. If there's a TikTok kind of video going around where there's a kid saying, hey, will you sign this petition that's pro Hamas? And people are like, absolutely. And they're like, well, before you sign it, for legalities, I need you to check off on each of the positions. And they're like, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with this. I don't agree with that. So like when they look at the actual policies of what is happening, they're taken aback, but they want to enrage and be involved in these protests. So it's going from Columbia University down to NYU. It's growing in energy with all of that. So where does this go to, and where do you draw the line of saying that's a problem or it's not a problem, or just anything that they're doing, as long as they're not harming others and stopping? What is your position on that? What advice would you give to this young gal?
Yeah, I think they're not educated. And I think that's the core issue here. You're talking about Ivy League schools, and these kids are paying thousands and thousands of dollars to go to school. They have no idea about any of these issues. Listen, Hamas is a terrorist organization. What they did to Israel was disgusting. It was deplorable. It was something that needs to be met with war. I mean, there's just no other way to do it. They crossed the line, and everyone needs to understand that. And they're calling for, you know, a ceasefire, but there was a ceasefire prior to October 7th, and yet they didn't respect it. So this is what happens when you do something that egregious. That's that for sure. I think that these college students aren't educated, and I think it highlights just that. They don't understand what's going on right now, and they're being used. So I would want to know, number one, who's funding these protests? Because they have all these nice tents that they're all plopping up onto the grass. Who's paying for that? I know it's not college students who aren't paying for that. So who's paying for that? Who's organizing, sending that message for her to go to NYU to help support the NYU students? I think that's important. That should have been a good follow-up question for this young woman, because I want to know who's doing these things. Yeah. I'm more interested in what's going on behind the scenes in all of this and why it's so well orchestrated. Because again, this could be just used to kind of pull at our attention to another story instead of looking at what's going on. You know, the news cycle this week was crazy, mainly because, and we'll probably talk about this soon, but with President Donald Trump, there was redacted documents that were now unredacted documents, thanks to Judge Cannon. And it pretty much highlights the coordinated effort between the Biden administration to go after President Trump. And it does highlight just that. And so I think they don't want you paying attention to that. They don't want you seeing that. And so that's why they're doing that. And then you also have the prosecution that's now going to be taking place in Arizona. So there's a lot of things that they're diverting your attention from. So I think that has to do with who's behind these protests. I don't think that it's a good thing for college students to be siding with Hamas, but maybe we should be doing study abroad programs. Maybe we should be sending these students to Gaza and see what they like over there for themselves. I mean, listen, I strongly do not side with Hamas. I know that if we were to give them, let's say, some of their in Gaza, some of their citizens refugee status here in the U.S., they would want to kill us. They are not people that we can associate with, and that's just the reality of it. They are brainwashed, sadly. So I think these college students don't know that, and they think that they're doing something for the greater good, but they're not. They don't realize that. So I think they need to be put in a position where they have to realize that.
But will the colleges bear the brunt of this? Because for years, a conservative speaker on a college campus has not been deemed a safe place. It's not been deemed a safe place for a comedian to go to a college campus. You know, even like a Bill Maher, who's, you know, as left as you can get on most every issue, says, I no longer even go to college campuses because I'm going to be shouted down, protested if I don't say everything that these kids agree with. It's hard to be funny. It's hard to do comedy, you know, when you're, you know, just an SNL formula playing, you know, to one particular party. Comedy's kind of eliminated. So they've banned conservative speakers from campuses for the most part, and then promoted, you know, known terrorists to come onto colleges and speak. And so they've sort of created this culture, but will they, you know, could the marketplace determine this is kind of what you're saying? Like, it should work itself out, and then they just get defunded and become so wacko that people look at them as being a big, you know, like daycare camp for teenagers.
Yeah. I mean, Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, actually went and spoke with the president of Colombia, and she said that she did criticize her for not doing enough. And so that's a Democrat saying that. So hopefully that works out. Now, what should happen on the back end of all of this is they should lose funding. And if you're a parent who's sending your child to Colombia, you should pull your kid out. Those universities, those colleges, their degrees honestly do not have value anymore. They used to be highly respected. I know when I went to college, and it wasn't that long ago, when somebody who in our high school was going off to an Ivy League school, I was jealous because I thought, wow, this person's going to have a great head start in life. And it's the opposite. And so I think people need to realize what you're actually doing and start pulling your money out of these institutions.
Because you think from a corporation, if you're going to hire somebody that came out of Columbia, out of NYU, out of one of these schools, you're like, oh my gosh, we're getting a nightmare, you know, of what kind of a person are we getting? I want to go to your next week because, I mean, we could spend all day on that topic. And, you know, you got Jewish professors being locked out of colleges. It's a crazy time. And it is a fair thing, you know, where if somebody's a free speech absolutist, you know, where do you land on that? And I do think that needs to be looked at closely. All right. Ukraine is losing this war. Thousands more will be slaughtered. Billions more will go towards funding the war machine. In the end, America will suffer its greatest loss. I think one of the saddest moments in history when I saw the House floor, over half of the participants of our elected officials are waving Ukrainian flags in there. The video speaks for itself. You listen to this on audio only, you probably have seen this go around, but literally the House of Representatives looks like it would have been from a foreign nation. What's next? What's next for our country when those are our elected officials and they seem to care much more about creating wars in foreign countries than they do about taking care of their own citizens?
Yeah, I don't know if they're just ignorant or if they're all just corrupt at this point, honestly. They're funding the war machine and they're going to continue to fund it. Sadly, Ukraine's going to lose this war. And, you know, we hear all these politicians saying that this isn't just a giveaway, this is like a loan. What happens when countries lose wars, especially ones over territories like this? And it's going to happen. Ukraine might not be a country. And that's just the reality. So you can't sit there and say we're giving them a loan because we might never get that loan back. And that's just the reality right now that we all have to deal with. So, and it's not just, you know, we're giving them a loan. We're getting loans ourselves. I mean, we can't even fund our own government. We can't even single-handedly fund our own government. We're running deficits every year, as you know, obviously, David. You're very well in the economic situation right now in our country. But I would say that this is just heartbreaking to see because, again, we could end all this. I think Russia and Ukraine need to come to the table and decide because at this point, Ukraine's not keeping its entire country. It's going to lose territory. No. And at this point, it's a matter of how much.
They're losing. And they're going to lose. The Russian military is now 15% bigger than it was the day they invaded Ukraine, and they're more equipped and well-funded. Even if you just look at the breakdowns of the amount of rounds of ammo that they make per day compared to the NATO-aligned nations, it's not even close. It's like 1,000 to 1. They are equipped to stay in this and be successful, and it seems to be just funny. The nuclear threats, too, between Poland and the Russian border is getting increasingly intense. And it seems like we're just egging them on until eventually this thing is going to become kinetic on a much larger scale.
Yeah. And we can't sit here and keep saying that we're not involved in the war while we continue to fund it by billions and billions of dollars. We are involved in this war. And I think, you know, all of these globalists and all these people just right now, the folks that you saw just waving their flags, right? They think that it's okay to sacrifice Ukrainian lives because in the long run, we're just weakening the Russian armies, how they kind of view it.
Not working.
They're going to lose life. And it's not working. It's not working at all. And honestly, that's a heartbreaking, disgusting way to even think in the first place, because I don't think the Russian people are bad people. I think they have a bad leader. And I can only imagine what people think of us because we have bad leaders too. So my heart breaks for all of them because, you know, they're being forced to go and die in these wars. These young men are being forced to die for their country in wars that are just completely preventable. They're just territory wars. There's nothing to this. And so it's heartbreaking that we continue to fuel this because I don't think we have to at all.
There's a reason why our show is not called the Flyover Republicans. It's Flyover Conservatives specifically, because we don't necessarily, if you watch this show very long, we hold Christians and Republicans accountable probably more than any other thing that we focus on and call out those double standards. And I want people to know exactly where you align politically. You got a tweet that breaks it down pretty simple. I think this is pretty good ideology. You say, I don't align with any political party. My political beliefs are simple, though. Okay. Here it is. We should have some music or something come behind this. But I believe in prioritizing Americans, keeping Americans safe, limiting government, defending the Constitution, and eliminating pedophiles. I don't know who's going to push back on that. Probably people are against America and pro-pedophilia. Those beliefs are now viewed as radical. Maybe we're onto something. All right. That's pretty good wrap-up of people want to know, well, then, Brianna, you're not for this, you're against this, and where do you stand? I think you make it pretty clear where you stand. And I think most Americans, probably on the left and the right, probably, if you sat them down one-on-one, they probably would agree with that statement.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hope they would. I mean, listen, I just want to see America thrive, and we're not thriving right now. And there's a lot of changes that need to be made because of it. I mean, we're not going to have, you know, we can't just sit here and keep importing migrants from other countries and have, you know, we're literally importing more migrants than we are creating American life. And yep. So I think we have a massive issue on our hands right now, and people just don't understand it. I used to, you know, I went from believing that I was a Democrat to a Republican to a conservative to now I'm just saying I'm done with all of you. And this is what my moral compass is, and you either fall in line with it or you don't, and that's where I'm going to fall on all my beliefs. So as of right now, I mean, I used to be super enthusiastic about a lot of Republicans. These days, I just don't trust anyone. I think they're all selling us out. And so I think a lot of Americans need to stop getting upset. So like the first tweet we cited before we started the segment fired up a lot of people because they thought I was anti-Israel, and that's not what it is. But ultimately, my point is this: we should all be able to have disagreements and not get upset, not get infuriated, not get nasty. And all these, like, I mean, everyone was coming after me on Twitter for my first tweet. We could have conversations. We could have debates. We need to get back to that. We need to get back to the core of our American values and stop getting so nasty and stop getting so vile over just little things that we should be able to debate openly. And
yeah.
We sadly no longer can. And I think it's really upsetting.
You talk about the J6 cases a lot. You've probably done more one-on-one conversations, bringing light to these as they've unfolded. You've made sure that these men and women are not forgotten and that justice needs to be upheld in these, what I consider very politically motivated FBI raids and things. You got a tweet here about Ken Harrelson. We got a guy now that's free. There's a win. Let's talk about something good on that front for a second.
Yeah. Sergeant Ken Harrelson, sadly, he was one of the Oath Keepers who was put on trial, and the Department of Justice actually put people who they knew were lying on the stand. And sadly, they sentenced him to over 3 years in prison. But he got the lightest of the sentences. The rest of them are going away for over a decade, some near even two decades. And no one's really stepped in and called out the DOJ for their lies. But thankfully, you know, we could celebrate the small win. Ken Harrelson is out of jail, and he will be sitting with us exclusively to discuss what happened when he was in jail, his trial and everything. Yeah, so that will be on my show shortly. I told him just kind of hold on, you know, wait, decompress, enjoy your life, settle in, and then we could go off and talk about all these things. So I think it's really important for people to understand what he had to endure. I mean, this man literally tried turning to a pastor in one of the prisons that he was at and asking him for services, and the pastor turned to him and pretty much told him no because he's a white supremacist, even though he has interracial family members. And they just constantly beat this man down. Yeah, not a very good one. No, they just constantly beat these people down, and he's had to suffer a lot while he was in jail. So it will be enlightening for folks to hear from him. But I know his wife is very, very happy that he's home now.
Mm. Let's jump to this next one. I don't know how you can look at the indictments and the court cases and the things coming against President Donald Trump anything other than election interference. The corporate media hacks are drooling on air as they detail why President Trump can't campaign 7 days a week, because he's facing bogus criminal trials. You have to be a moron in order to digest their propaganda. I like how you just kind of cut to the chase there. So tell me what motivates these morons, and how do they see this as democracy?
I know. Don't you cringe whenever they say defend democracy? That's when you know it's like the communist dog whistle at this point. It's not good when they say that. I usually cringe every time. But I think it's interesting because I was watching MSNBC and I'm listening to all of them. I mean, they're literally drooling over the fact that he can't even campaign. I mean, that's just so un-American. But then again, that's why they're doing all of this, is just to keep him busy. So he's not campaigning. So they're draining him financially. They're doing all these things to get to go after him.
Yep.
Un-American, but not enough people are calling it out. You know, we just saw what happened in Arizona earlier on this week. And in Arizona, they're indicting people close to Trump. And what it's meant to do, again, is to create pressure on the same characters, the Giuliani, who is his attorney, Jenna Ellis, obviously, she's pretty weak. She always falls. But Christina Bob, who should have never been indicted in the first place, she's a great human being, a great attorney. But it's meant to go after these lawyers so that there's pressure involved. So if they do steal the November election again, which I strongly do believe that they will, any lawyer would be crazy to take on President Trump as a client, represent him, and go after whoever stole the election because, well, they know what comes to those individuals. And I think Americans need to wake up and realize what's going on here. The cases in Fulton County, New York City, here in Florida, they're all crumbling against President Trump. And so they're using the Arizona one as another thing to pop up and to go after him. And they don't stop. What motivates them specifically, David, is hate. They have hate in their heart, and that's what's fueling them. They hate somebody they don't even know, that they've never even met. But because he pushes back and he doesn't give in to what they want and what the establishment wants, they go after him full force. And that's what you're seeing playing out right now. This is why so many politicians don't stick their necks out, because they know what will happen to them if they do. So sadly, this is what we have going on right now in our country.
Yeah. And people are living in fear of non-elected agencies. You know, they're scared of the FBI. You're scared of the CIA. You're scared of, like, government has never been looked at as like, oh, you know, the safest, best organization, you know, in history. I'm talking like anyone that's ever lived throughout all of history, their government maybe doesn't necessarily always operate in their best interest. And that's kind of why America was a shining light, because we had elected representation. But there's such a gap between what the people want, what they expect, and what they were told was going to happen, and what leaders do when they get into those positions. And then we have these lifelong bureaucrats that are just, they just kind of wait it out. Presidents are there 4 years. And then you got guys like, you know, Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden that make a 40, 50 year career out of just ebbing and flowing and chipping away and enriching themselves. That's why I love the kind of guests that you bring on the Brianna Morello Show, because I don't know anybody that's diving into the truth of what's going on than Julie Kelly. This is an incredible interview that you had. I mean, if people don't know Julie Kelly, man, she's been a guest with Tucker, you know, throughout the years, and just always doing the research behind the scenes and some of these documents she's putting out. And you had a chance to have a great sit down with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Julie Kelly is one of the best. I would probably say she is the best, honestly. I don't think there's anyone else coming close to her, because she could, and I joke with her all the time about how amazing she is at this, but she could sift through a bunch of court documents and figure out which ones to pull out. Now, the Florida case that's going on right now, it's in regards to the classified documents. If you don't know all the players and all the characters involved in that case, it's really hard to find these gems that Julie is able to find. And so she's able to extract the parts in these documents that are being unsealed, tell you who the people who are involved here, tell you why it's relevant, and break it down to like the simplest form. So sometimes the tweets can kind of be a little confusing. So I had her on the show, and she just did an incredible job simplifying everything so that if you weren't paying attention from day one, this interview will get you caught up on everything that you need to know with all the key players. And she does an excellent job at doing that. So we've got that up on our Rumble page now. But if you're looking to follow somebody on Twitter too, Julie is a great follow, because there's more documents being unsealed and she's the first one to get them. She's the first one to dig through them. And I mean, even the Supreme Court hearings, opening arguments that were happening earlier this week as well, she was there, she was listening to it, and she was creating the simple form of it so you could follow it and feel like you're informed. So she's great at that. And I'd highly recommend everyone give that a listen, because she's one of the best.
And people got to go on the Brianna Morello channel, because I tell you what, literally every day you're uncovering something. And there's like 20 things I wanted to get into with you today, because like you're having 2-3 guests a day. You have a nightly show coming out every single night. And if people want to cut through all the opinions and I think this and conspiracy and this is like, you only talk about things that you have the receipts for. And it's actual real documents, real research. This is what's happening. If people want to know, you know, use the term from the Matrix. If you want to understand the real, you got to go to Brianna's channel. But you're also kind of like the best version of Donald Trump is when he's like at the bodega in New York. He's at the McDonald's and he's Palestinian. He's sort of a man of the people. And I don't know how he pulls this off being a, you know, a New York billionaire. And then, but when he gets with the construction guys, he like is like one of them. Eric Trump has that same vibe, but so do you. Yeah. You get down and rub elbows with all of us little people. And, you did a hike, with Luke, there in Florida, and, shows you out with people. What was that like? And what was conversations with people like, hey, tell me what's going on with this? Are they asking you questions? Or are they kind of telling you the things you need to be covering?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Yeah, yeah. No, there was people, you know what, they all don't politically agree. I mean, there's one person who's a progressive running for Congress. I mean, there's all these different like people who come from all different groups politically. It's just trying to hang out and meet people. And so it's cool to be there because Luke definitely has a way of pulling people in like that.
Yeah.
It was interesting. We learned a lot. We kind of, you know, met a bunch of people. His audience was there. Some of his, you know, followers came out. And then just some people who just wanted to meet other people came out. So it was definitely a cool experience. You know, Luke joked and was like, oh, we didn't get that lost. We did get very lost, and it was like almost 90 degree weather in like Miami weather, and it was not very comfortable. So I held Luke's feet to the fire on that one for getting us lost.
What are you like in those settings? People see in your studio and you know, you're all on point. Are you kind of a diva when you get out in the bugs and that, or you got another edge? Are you kind of tough too? Are you a whiner? What are you like outside of air conditioning in your studio?
It's a tough question, David. I'd say for the first 2 hours, I was calm. And then about when the 2 hour mark hit, I was like, Luke, we're going back. sweating. It's gross. We're all dirty because the dirt's kicking up on you. I'm a little high maintenance. I'm not going to lie. I will never deny that. I warned Luke of it when he invited me in the first place. So I won't deny it, but I wasn't complaining. I got to see lots of turtles and lots of different creatures and things. So that was exciting. But once hour two hit, I was ready to go into the air conditioning.
So you're tough, but you got a limit.
Yeah, we got a limit for sure. Yeah. And even I brought my best friend Allie with me. Allie was done after an hour and a half too. She's like, Brianna, I can't believe you take me at outdoor events like this when I take you to Mar-a-Lago and other events. So she wasn't very happy with the trade-off.
Well, that's good. So you're not as tough as Luke, but you're a fair stretch beyond Allie.
Yep. That's a good balance.
That's a good balance. It's a good place to. It's a man should know his limits. So that's good. Yes. No, when to say when. Brianna, thank you for the work that you do. And I think the suppression of truth caused this like whack-a-mole thing of other people popping up. And you're literally the best among them. When I see in all of media at breaking these things down, being consistent, having a predetermined moral and political compass, and then holding those that you're monitoring to that standard of not only your compass, but also to their own standard.
Yesterday, we had a great discussion with Dr. Syed Haider. It's actually one of our more popular segments because people can't stop talking about all of the benefits surrounding ivermectin. Take a listen. During the pandemic, there was a massive disinformation campaign that was being led against ivermectin. And it was bizarre because, well, it was government officials and politicians, and they were not in favor of ivermectin being used on humans. But it hasn't stopped and it hasn't ended. Sadly, we still have members of Congress currently, right now, thinking that ivermectin is not used on humans. And don't just take my word for it. Listen to Congressman Jamie Raskin, who had to be corrected because he was saying that it's only used for horses. Take a listen.
Let's start with ivermectin, which I believe is an animal deworming agent that some people were advocating for use to treat COVID-19. Has this been approved as a form of treatment or a cure for COVID-19?
No, it has not, if I may. I should also point out it also has benefit for humans with worms, which is a huge problem in Asia. So it actually won a Nobel Prize. Because it's an amazing drug, both for animals and humans who have worms.
And it did, in fact, win a Nobel Peace Prize. And well, because it has great, great benefits for humans. And again, folks, it wasn't just members of Congress. It was also the FDA pushing false information. Now, the FDA, because there's been a lawsuit involved in all of this, the FDA just recently was told by the courts that they had to yank down a disinformation tweet, one of the most famous ones, actually, regarding ivermectin use. You guys might remember this one. You're not a horse. You're not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it. Well, a court told them they had to remove that, which is disappointing because, again, folks, this is the FDA, so this is supposed to be people we could strongly rely on. So I want to bring in a doctor who's very familiar with all the benefits regarding ivermectin. Let's bring in Dr. Syed Haider. He is one of the founders over at mygotodoc.com. Dr. Haider, thank you for joining us. You know, you have been so instrumental for me when it comes to just learning more about ivermectin and how it could benefit humans and what we could use it for. And so I'm really excited to have this segment with you and discuss all of this. I know that you have, you know, we spoke about this prior, but you've spoken to me about how it could be used to treat COVID, long COVID, and as well as cancer and other issues that people might have. So that for us and how you could push back on this disinformation campaign that's coming out from our federal government?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really glad to be on with you because I've probably used more ivermectin in more people than anyone else in the United States. And as that earlier clip was suggesting, it's used a lot overseas for, you know, deworming human beings as well as animals. In the U.S., it's barely used at all. We usually use it for scabies. But nowadays, what we learned, actually, one of the silver linings of the pandemic was that a lot of people realized that ivermectin is like this miracle drug that's useful for so many things. It's not just prevention and treatment of COVID. It's, like you said, long COVID, also vaccine injury, actually. It's one of the best treatments for vaccine injury. Cancer, autoimmune disease, mold toxicity. I mean, I found it really effective for a lot of inflammatory chronic diseases. So the greatest thing about it is there's like basically no downside risk. It's the safest drug I can think of in the formulary amongst all the medications in the world. It's one of the absolute safest. I have never seen a serious side effect from ivermectin. I mean, like a little bit of dizziness or something is the worst that it gets. And then it wears off a few days after stopping. And it doesn't even require you to stop taking it. So, you know, people will recommend you monitor liver function and stuff. Again, it's never caused liver failure, ever. Sometimes you'll see liver enzymes go up. It's not a problem. Doesn't mean you have to stop taking ivermectin. So very safe, very effective, and definitely worth trying if you have a chronic disease, probably of almost any kind. It may be helpful, but definitely if it's got anything to do with spike protein, if there's any kind of cancer involved, and if it's an autoimmune disease, this would be one of the first things to try.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're saying it could be useful for those who have cancer. How does that work necessarily?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've published blogs on this. And so it has some effects. I think it was the P53 tumor suppressor gene. So it has anti-inflammatory effects. It has anti-cancer effects. So there's multiple anti-cancer effects, and we don't fully understand why it works. But with cancer, generally speaking, what you would want to do is you would want to have a multi-pronged approach, because if you can kill like 99% of cancer, and ivermectin would probably kill 99% of most cancer cells, but if there's 1% remaining that are resistant to the effects of ivermectin, then those will become your entire cancer. Then you'll have a 100%, you know, of the tumor will be actually resistant to ivermectin. So when you're treating something as dangerous as cancer, you need to understand that it will evolve to evade your treatments. So ivermectin definitely is a key part of cancer treatment. You could add fenbendazole. You can add a lot of other things to it as well. There's a whole lot of actually off-label cancer treatments, which gets to another point from that clip of yours that, like, just because it's not approved for cancer doesn't mean you can't use it for cancer. You can use it off-label for whatever you want in the United States of America. You know, physicians do this all the time. Most of the stuff that we prescribe day-to-day in any clinic in America, mainstream or non-mainstream, is going to be for an off-label indication. The FDA did not specifically approve it for that indication.
Yeah, I remember when the pandemic first happened, I was working at a corporate media outlet, and we had a doctor talking about ivermectin. And this was prior, before I even knew about your services. And I had reached out to him when I did test positive. And I'm somebody who has asthma. And then whenever I get sick, I usually need a nebulizer or go to the emergency room. After getting COVID, I literally am taking ivermectin. I had no symptoms after that. So for my firsthand experience, I know that this worked for me. And I was so discouraged to see so many people just coming out and saying, no, don't take that, don't use that, because I think it would have had great benefits for so many Americans across the country. But I mean, you offer great services, and I kind of wanted to direct our audience to that, because I think it's so important for them to have options, because so many people will kind of shoo you away. I know a lot of the big pharmaceutical companies, they don't want you taking this because it is not as expensive. I wanted to get my ivermectin filled at a Walgreens by me, and I was turned down when I tried doing so. So your services are my go-to doc.com. Give people some options, and then all the ways you just kind of detailed it, it gives them the ivermectin to be used as a tool to treat those issues. So kind of walk us through the services you offer right now on your website.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing before we do that, I just should mention that it actually has antiviral effects for a broad range of viruses, not just COVID-19. So you can actually use it for the flu as well. So this is actually in FLCCC and other, you know, non-mainstream protocols for flu, including avian influenza. So it's something to have on hand really for anything that they might throw at us. But in terms of what we offer at my go-to doc, really people should take a look, because there is something there for everyone, and we will beat anyone's price. So a lot of places that offer these off-label medication protocols, they're actually making money on the medicine itself. And so they'll direct you to a pharmacy that kind of is giving them a kickback. We don't do any of that. So we're able to offer ivermectin at much lower prices. And people will go to places like India and China and Mexico trying to get like cheaper drugs, or like they'll get animal drugs from like the animal supply store. Like, we're cheaper than all of those options. Like, there's no reason. You can get it from an American compounding pharmacy through us. And the other thing that people worry about is that compounding pharmacies aren't allowed to put like a, like they have to put like a 1 year expiration date on all their stuff. And it's just like a rule from the FDA that every batch, if it's not tested for like 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, you can't say, like, you have to put a 1 year, 6 month or 1 year expiration date as a rule. But the US government actually tested medications in order to save money for the army, so they didn't have to keep buying new medications. And they found out that like medications that are dry, like powders or capsules or tablets, they last like 20 years plus without like serious like diminishment of their potency. So there's really no concern. You can get it for much cheaper. We also offer free registration if you just want to like ask questions. You can actually register for free and ask as many questions as you want for the rest of your life. And then we have med kits, you know, available for travel and all kinds of like emergency med kits that are really popular as well. As well as if you have a vaccine injury or you have long COVID, we can definitely take care of that. There's protocols based around ivermectin and low-dose naltrexone primarily that are super effective. Like 90-95% of people, all they really need is to take ivermectin for like a few months and they get over all these spike protein toxicity problems, whether it's from a shot or from long COVID.
That's incredible, though. And folks, right now, when you go over to my gototodoc.com, you guys could also secure 10% off by using the promo code BREE. That's B-R-E. It's definitely a great added bonus that I'd highly recommend you do. Why not save some money while you're there? But, you know, you mentioned the vaccine injured. I mean, sadly, we've all got family who are dealing with that. I know I've got a couple of family members on my side, unfortunately. You mentioned that ivermectin is used. How does that work? And then are there any other treatments that you guys do offer as well to pair up with that ivermectin?
Yeah, so if you go to my go-to stack, which is kind of an affiliated site of mine where we have supplements, you'll find a detox supplement that has nattokinase, serrapeptase, bromelain. So these different compounds are really effective for detoxing of the spike protein. Mm-hmm. And you combine that with the herbal supplement that we have that has curcumin, nigella sativa, dandelion in it. And this is kind of like Peter McCullough's kind of base spike detox protocol, but like super boosted. And it has to be in two separate supplements because the curcumin that's in his protocol has to be taken with food. And then the nattokinase and the bromelain are supposed to be taken without food. So they have to be split into two. And then we added some synergistic stuff. So that's a great approach for detoxing. And then medication wise, you want to be on ivermectin, low-dose naltrexone, and you titrate up the doses over the course of a few weeks. And what we found is some people do great on like 12 milligrams or less. And other people need like 30, 40, 50 milligrams of ivermectin. And this is where a lot of other people kind of drop the ball. You go to some of these other places, they just don't give you enough ivermectin. They'll give you like, you know, just a few capsules, enough for a couple of weeks or something, whether it's for treatment or prevention or for long COVID or vaccine injury, they're just not using enough ivermectin. So when it's not working, it's usually because you didn't use the right dose and you didn't, you know that you had to increase the dose. And we give you a protocol for gradually increasing over time. We like to help people do it in a comprehensive way. So we'll give you directions for like lifestyle changes, things like intermittent fasting, you know, sun exposure, sleeping properly, eating differently, you know, an anti-inflammatory, maybe an autoimmune paleo diet, like an elimination diet, and then supplement protocols and then medications. So it's like a three-pronged approach where you're covering all your bases. And some people, like, they don't want to use medications, right? So it's fine. We've got you covered. You can take supplements. You can do lifestyle stuff. And you will get better if you commit to it, right? It's just a matter of how committed you are. And other people kind of lean away from the lifestyle. They just want to use medications. And that's fine, too. You know, wherever you're at, we'll meet you. We'll meet you there.
Yeah. Well, I like all these options. Plus, you also have a weight loss program. So I just want to recommend to our audience to head over to the website. Give it a look for yourself. It's mygototodoc.com. And then when you use the promo code BREE, that's B-R-E, you're going to get 10% off. So you got to use that promo code, especially nowadays. Everyone can use a little savings these days. So again, guys, it's promo code BREE. That's B-R-E. Dr. Heider, thank you so much for joining us today. This was so insightful and I learned so much from you. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Earlier this week, Dr. Kirk Elliott joined our show to detail how our economy's doing. Let's take a look back. Dr. Kirk Elliott is one of my favorite go-tos whenever I want to talk about the economy, so we're so happy he's here with us today. I want to jump into this, Dr. Kirk, because, well, it's very, very interesting. We've all kind of know that things are getting a little bit more expensive under Joe, but there's actual data points to break it all down. So walk us through it a little bit. Tell us how this is all planned out.
Well, I would say a little bit more than a little bit more expensive. The numbers are showing like three times more expensive.
Yeah.
So how much difference does a leader make, right? When you've got Trump, who was growing the economy, who cared about America more than the rest of the world, versus being a nationalist type president versus a globalist type president who cares about the rest of the world more than his own country, right? Yeah. Funding all these stimulus programs, everything else, they print money like there's no tomorrow. That causes inflation, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't believe for a second, not a second. And the reason why we want to talk about this right now is because it's an election year and politicians are going to be talking about the economy a bit. Even Bill Clinton, you know, said one of the best lines ever. It's like, it's the economy, stupid. You know, and he's right. People are going to vote with their wallets, right? So let's look at gas prices, for example. Okay. So under Trump, gas was up $2.40, or the average was $2.42 a gallon. Under Joe Biden, $3.54 is the average. That's up 46%. I don't buy it for a second that inflation's only 3.2%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's up a lot. Mm-hmm. But it gets worse. I mean, it sounds like a cheesy game show host here, because there's always going to be something behind the next door, Brianna. But look at mortgage rates. This is a big one, because mortgage, you know, your mortgage payment for most people is the largest payment that you have every month, right? So when Trump started his presidency in 2017, average mortgage rate was 4.1% on a 30-year mortgage. By the time he was done, January 21st of 2021, 2.8%. It was down 32%, where Biden started at 2.8%, because that's where Trump ended, and now it's 6.8. So mortgage rates under him are up 146%. Why? Because they're printing money like there's no tomorrow to fund every stimulus under the sun, yeah. Right? And so you have to use raising interest rates to slow down that inflation. That's the policy mechanism that they use. So it's no wonder housing prices are 146% more to borrow than it was before, because of the policies coming out of DC to try to fund everything that they possibly can, right? I mean, that's a brutal combination. And, you know, but there's sadly more to this story. So because everything's more expensive, right? What were savings? Now, you look at savings under Trump, they were up 129%. Under Biden, they're down 72%. What does that mean? People can't afford to live. They're pulling money out of their savings every single month after month after month after month just to make ends meet. So Trump, a growing economy. Biden, a shrinking economy. Trump, people could afford to live and they were spending. Biden, they can't afford to live and they're pulling out of their savings, their rainy day funds, which adds more stress and everything to their lives. Now, so you look at this kind of stuff and, well, people can't afford. Well, why? Well, wages are coming down. Mm-hmm. So under Biden, you look at this chart, and these are quarterly numbers, people's average real earnings every quarter after quarter after quarter for the last 13 quarters, as long as he's been president, down between $300 and $400 per quarter. You multiply that for a year, people's wages are down, well, for a quarter, four, eight, 12, 16, about $1,600 a year, right, is what their wages are coming down, while prices are going through the roof. As we started the show, prices under Biden for things are up over three times as fast as what they were under Trump, right? So you've got declining wages, increasing prices. I mean, does this sound good?
No, it doesn't at all.
About how great the economy is, how people are working, how they've tamed the inflationary beast. And so but they haven't. If they've tamed the inflationary beast, they would actually start lowering interest rates. Why do they keep pausing every single month at the Fed? And they said, well, we were going to lower interest rates, but we're just going to pause because they've got a huge catch 22. If you lower interest rates when you haven't killed inflation, inflation explodes. If you raise interest rates when we're in debt up to our eyeballs, you create a huge recession / depression. So they can't do either one. So they do nothing. They're just like, we're just going to pause, right? Acting like financial geniuses. No, no, they just don't know what to do because either one of their consequences, because it's gotten so out of control and Biden's not growing the economy, that they just say, okay, let's just stay at these higher interest rates for longer. We're not going to do anything. Well, that's the problem that we're in right now. And this is where for Americans who are living hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, Biden's economy is horrible, not just for the present, but for the future, which is why we need economic growth back rapidly. See, Goldman Sachs just came out. I'm sorry, not Goldman Sachs. Morgan Stanley just came out this morning with their new data that said, if we don't get control of our unsustainable debt here in America, it's over in 2 years.
Yeah.
What's over? Our economy, America as we know it, if we can't pay off our unsustainable debt, it's over. No other country is going to want to invest in U.S. treasuries anymore. What Biden's doing is not going to do anything to basically fix our debt. In fact, everything he's doing is adding to it. Look at his new budget. His new budget, $7.8 trillion, I think, and we're supposed to bring in like $5 trillion. You know, it's like, good grief, that's $2.8 trillion in the hole. That is not fixing the debt situation. It keeps adding to it. We have problems, Brianna, unless we get a new president and a new Congress in who can control spending and have policies of lowering interest rates, lowering taxes, creating jobs, and creating economic growth. America is going down a fateful path. So, I mean, that's the ugly state of the economy right now.
Yeah. I mean, we see it everywhere. I know our audience is completely in the loop on this one because, well, everyone is now, you know, you have to get involved with the economy updates these days because it affects everything from gas to just food expenses. Everything has skyrocketed and it's really hard for just average Americans to buckle down and to figure out how they're going to pay for things. And it doesn't help when Congress prioritizes spending over $95 billion in foreign aid. It's only making it worse. It's just hard to even talk about this. Dr. Kirk Elliott, how do we kind of give our audience a piece of advice on what they should be looking to do right now? Because, well, we like solutions on this show. We don't want it to be just a bunch of Debbie Downers talking about how horrible Joe Biden is. We're all about the solutions. So what should they be looking for?
Yeah, well, we have to paint the problem before you can actually understand the solution. So everything that we just talked about caused stocks, bonds, mutual funds to come down. Every one of those policies actually caused gold and silver to go up, including the war that we've got, a conflict with Iran and Israel. Tension, uncertainty causes gold and silver to go up. We've got that. This is why over the last 60 days, silver's up over 30%. It's why almost day after day after day, gold keeps meeting new highs, like historical highs. There's a reason for this is because the worse things get economically, the better gold and silver perform. General rule of thumb. So we can have a smile on our face, protect, preserve. You just have to reallocate into strength and get out of weakness if you want your portfolio to shine during these dark times.
Yeah. And I think it's really, really important. So I wanted to direct our audience over to briannagold.com. That's where they could get in touch with your team. So Brianna, briannagold.com. Just a little form. You fill it out. They'll reach out to you, they'll schedule an appointment, and then they'll schedule a meeting with you. And I think it's really important to talk to people about these things because, well, we all need to come up with a plan. We all just can't be sitting here waiting and hoping maybe, you know, Trump gets elected in November to save us all. it might be too late by then. We just never know. So the best thing to do is to come up with a plan. I know I've reached out to you. We've talked about my financial goals to purchase a home and how I go about doing so. So again, folks, if you're looking to talk to Dr. Kirk Elliott and a member of his team, I highly recommend you head over to briannagold.com right now. Fill out that form. Let them know your good friend Brianna sent you over. And just reach out. The hardest part is literally just filling out the form. They'll talk to you. It's not a high-pressure phone call. They just go over what your goals are and give you some of their insight. Dr. Kirk Elliott, I love speaking to you because you know it all. You got it all going on. So thank you so much for joining us today. I want to tell you guys about my friend Allie. Allie is always complaining about her feet hurting because she's always in heels and working on them. And so I gifted her the new My Slippers 2.0. And let me tell you something, guys, it's been a complete game changer for Allie. You see, Allie tells me now it feels like she's walking on clouds because these slippers are so soft. And the cushioning on them is perfect. She is so happy with her new My Slippers 2.0 that she's bragging about it to everyone. And well, if you go on MyPillow.com right now, you'll notice that everyone's talking about these slippers. They're incredible. So right now, you have to head over to MyPillow.com and secure your slippers right now. Now, if you want to save up to 66% off, you got to do it by using promo code Brianna. That's B-R-E-A-N-N-A. Again, make sure you're using promo code Brianna if you want to secure your 66% off and get them now before they sell out.
To celebrate the new year, we're having the biggest sale ever on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, save 60% on our Goose Down Comforters, the best comforters ever. They go perfectly with our MyPillow bed sheets and duvet covers. Save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels. They're made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Our initial quantities are extremely low, so get them now before they go. Our seasonal flannel sheets are finally in. You save up to 50% and they sell out fast every year, so order now. They're truly the best flannel sheets you'll ever sleep on. Or save up to 80% on all our clearance items. And this is where it gets even better. For a limited time, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all MyPillow products. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Well, that does it for us tonight. Thank you for joining us. We greatly appreciate your support as always. We want to remind our audience that one of our sponsors is a great gift for those of you looking to get a gift for Mother's Day. Head over to MyPillow.com right now and take a look. There's a whole bunch of new items that you might have not even seen before. Mike's been keeping his website and his inventory updated. So head over to MyPillow.com and use promo code Bree. That's B-R-E. And you'll get up to 66% off. It's the best promo code to use right now for that website. So again, folks, use promo code Bree. That's B-R-E to save up to 66% off. Join us back here on Monday with a great exclusive you won't see anywhere else. Have a great weekend, folks. And if you enjoyed that segment, make sure you hit that like button. And if you want to see the news before it becomes the news, you have to subscribe to our channel. And well, if you have a liberal friend that you're looking to save, make sure you share this content with them.